Back with you on a midweek Wednesday, February 17th, 2021 on Connecticut Today. Recent political news, we analyze that with Dr. Gary Rose, who heads the government department at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. High school sports, basketball and hockey, some of these sports anyway. Back up and running again, Sean Patrick Boley checked in with us in the 5 o'clock hour from GameTimeCT.com. And I started off the show with some of my thoughts as a talk show host on the death of Rush Limbaugh. Got to start with something that's, of course, relative really to this radio station, this format, to radio in general, to the tenor of America down through the past couple, three decades. You know, it's not often, as much as we love radio, as much as you great folks who listen every day to this station and, frankly, to other stations around the state. A lot of choices. People make different choices for whatever reason. But it's not often that radio is the lead story in the news. It's not often that newspapers, newspaper websites, radio networks, television networks deal with an industry story, as they say, at the top of the news, but this one is unavoidable. Rush Limbaugh has passed away after about a one-year battle with cancer. Most of that battle, you kind of knew it was pretty bad. I think he had stage 4 lung cancer, stage 3 or 4 when it was found. So the prognosis, if you talk to anyone who knew anything about this, they would have told you right away. It wasn't good. He underwent, I think, some experimental treatments. He rebounded a bit, but it was termed terminal a few months ago, so Rush has died at 70. I probably would not be here doing this format with you people right now if I hadn't heard Rush Limbaugh one day way back, and I think it was 1987, 88, 89. I know it was the late 90s, but I'm telling you, I can remember exactly where I was. I won't give you the exact address. It would bore you, but I can remember exactly where I was. And I was flipping around the dial, and I stopped, and I heard this guy in the middle of the day, and I knew it wasn't a local host. And I heard this guy talking politics, but just the tenor of how he was saying it, immediately, within like 15 or 20 seconds, I was like, wow, who is this guy? And again, this was late 80s. So this was 30-something years ago. I was in my mid to late 20s and already working in the business. I was working part-time doing news or I forget exactly where I was at the time. And this hit me right between the eyes. And after I heard him give somewhat of a monologue or go round and round with some callers, I heard a spoof he did, one of his voice guys who did a spoof of the Dion song, The Wanderer. You know that old Dion song, I'm the kind of guy. Well, his voice guy, I think Paul Shanklin at the time, was doing, you know, spoof songs for him. And he did it in the voice of Ted Kennedy. Well, I'm the type of guy who would, you know, what Ted Kennedy's reputation was. Ask Chris Dodd about those waitress sandwiches. Not me saying it, folks. Look it up. Look up waitress sandwich. You'll see what I mean. Don't get mad at me. Don't kill the messenger here. And he followed it up with that. And I just remember staring at my radio going, oh, my God. You know, number one, I never heard it. Number two, to hear it in the middle of the day, I figured, well, okay, if this was at night and this was a crazy show at night or even a morning show or an overnight show, in the middle of the day when the sun was out, and there were cars zooming back and forth on an AM radio station. And one thing led to another, and you know what happened. And even in his waning days over the past few months when people knew the end was near, he was still in the top 5 or 10 of, you know, of audience in this business. And, you know, I was on a couple of radio discussion boards with industry people, you know, that I know and some I don't know. And you may be on discussion boards with whatever industry you're in, legal, financial, whatever, and you talk about, you know, the impact that people had to both to your industry and then to the general tenor, the general discussion in your industry or to the country. And listen, I know there are people out there in this business and listeners, not just listeners. I mean, I know there are people in this business who and listeners who loved Rush Limbaugh, who thought he was the greatest thing since sliced bread, who despised the guy. They thought he was nothing but vitriol and racism and bad for the business. Well, okay, you can feel whatever you like. And I always told people if they didn't want to listen to Rush, I tell people who don't want to listen to me. You know, who write me emails and on the air tell me, well, I'm going to stop listening. Well, all right, don't listen. Fine. Go pick somebody else. I don't care. But I always tell them, then you know, flip the switch off. Go, there's a station selector on your radio for a reason. But no matter what you think of Rush Limbaugh's politics, he was damn good for radio. At a time when a lot of AM stations, not so much here on WICC, the stations are always been a powerhouse. But frankly, in the late 80s, when he came along, there was a lot of worry that a lot of stations on the AM band were going to go dark. I'm not making that up. That's the truth. And then here came this guy who basically, as all the great people in this business do to a point, didn't care about what people thought about him. And that's the beauty of people like him. And it's not so much the politics. People say, well, you know, blah, 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 blah. You only admire him because he's a conservative. Not really. I mean, the conservatism had something to do with it. But he had an incredible, profound effect on America, I think, for the good. And we'll continue this straight ahead. If you have any thoughts, 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, 216 on Connecticut Today. A couple of more minutes here regarding the passing of a giant of American opinion, conservatism, or radio, Rush Limbaugh, who passed away at 70. It's been the lead story on the news the past few hours, undoubtedly will be. Look, I say this whether or not you agree with him politically, because to me, you can acknowledge the greatness of something somebody does without necessarily agreeing with them. Got to remember, when he came along in the late 80s, all right, and a lot of you folks can remember this, when he came along in the late 80s, part of the reason he took off, well, there was two parts. Number one, he was really good at what he did. I mean, from a radio behind of the microphone point of view, his timing was impeccable. His use of satire, impeccable. His phrasing, the way he laid out the program, if you ever listened to him like millions of us did. And that was his instincts as a disc jockey. A friend of mine, a dear friend of mine in this business, worked with him in the 70s at KQV in Pittsburgh. Knew him a little bit. You know, my friend was doing mornings, Rush was doing nights, so they rarely ran into each other. But he remembers him as a nice guy, quiet, kind of laid back. But you take that training as a disc jockey, and yeah, my first forays in this business 30-something years ago, we're playing records. Yeah, vinyl records back then. Hey, they're coming back, though. So part of the reason Rush was good is because he took those techniques and he melded them with his politics. And you got to remember, in the late 1980s, there was really no conservative right of center, whether you liked it or not. There was really no conservative right of center presence in the media. There just wasn't. Everything was center or center left. If you remember, you know what the conservative presence in the media was? Honestly. The National Review magazine. There were a couple of conservative magazines. And you know what you had on television? Honestly, or on electronic media? You had the McLaughlin Group on PBS. and you had Firing Line with William F. Buckley, who I used to love. But that was it. And then all of a sudden, here came this guy in the middle of the day, noon to 3 Eastern time, and then 9 to noon as people were still staggering out of bed on the West Coast, and he just didn't give a crap. And, of course, a lot of Democrats hated him, but, you know, it is what it is. And, of course, he segued that into a short-lived TV show and other stuff, but, again, it was a combination of marketing, radio technique, and the notion that he was going to represent about half the country. It's thinking. You know, I was on a radio board with somebody who I actually don't know. I mean, I've exchanged messages with him a few times on the radio board, and he put it perfectly. Before we go to the phones here and wrap up this segment, he put it perfectly. He said, Rush Limbaugh, man, now remember when Rush came into existence, late 80s? He said he became the conservatives' SNL. Rush was the conservative Saturday Night Live. And as much as the real SNL, which was in its heyday back then, you know, mid to late 80s before, you know, everybody started to fracture and go their other ways, in its heyday, it was miles funnier than it is today. But every Saturday night, they would pound on conservatives, Reagan and, you know, previous to that, Gerald Ford and everybody like that. Well, you know, Rush came along and, okay, you can have Saturday night, you can have all the primetime shows. I'll take noon to 3 Monday through Friday, you know, and I'll get to 15, 20 million folks a week. So RIP Rush. Frankly, in this business, because of the revenue that his show was able to bring to, in a lot of markets, smaller stations who were teetering on the edge, he saved a boatload of jobs in this business. Now, he may have taken up 3 hours during the middle of the day where you may have had a local host working. That's always been an argument in this business. But his mark on this business, on the broadcast, the radio business, the broadcast medium, the spoken word electronic medium, he is easily the most influential national radio personality that there has been to this point. Okay, you could put maybe Howard Stern in the same building. You could put maybe the late, great Paul Harvey in the same building, maybe. But far and away, my business, this industry has lost in this format the greatest of all time. So rest in peace, Rush. And Rush Limbaugh passing away at 70, a true titan of what we do in this business, no matter what format. Want to bring in one of our regulars, of course. You know him well, Dr. Gary Rose, Sacred Heart University, chair of the Department of Government. Get his view on what transpired impeachment trial that pretty much was a foregone conclusion, but it happened anyway. Gary, hi, good to talk to you again. Before we talk about that, the death of Rush Limbaugh, which was not unexpected. He had terminal cancer, but Gary, you know, I've been doing this for 30 something years. You've been following this as well. As far as a media personality and their effect on the American body politic, I don't think anybody comes close.
Yeah, I agree with you on that, Paul. I don't think anybody was more relevant and more high profile and influential, certainly in articulating, you know, conservative points of view within our political system. And I think as far as the conservative movement in this country, and it is a very strong one, Rush was right in the center of that. And he will be tremendously missed by his listeners, that's for sure.
And Gary, you and I are about the same age. You know, I was telling folks at the beginning of the show, you know, I got to remember something, and you do, I'm sure. You know, prior to Rush coming on the scene in the late 80s, the electronic conservatism consisted pretty much, Gary, of John McLaughlin, of the McLaughlin Group, and of Firing Line with William F. Buckley. Other than that, there was nothing.
Yeah, there was very little. Yeah, and Buckley was, of course, that was a real intellectual show. I used to watch Firing Line. Nobody really was like Buckley and probably never will be. But then Rush came along with really a new brand, kind of a fire brand of discussing, you know, political issues. And he really hit a nerve out there. And he really opened up the door, I think, for a good number of others who followed, you know. And he was in many ways the model for conservative talk shows, really.
Gary, we come off this second, who knows, there may have been a third, you never know, this second impeachment proceeding against the president, the former president, not a surprise. You know, we all thought there would be six Republican yeses. There ended up being seven. Gary, do you think if you put the entire Republican Senate caucus in a room and said, okay, you don't have to give me your names, just put your votes, guilty or not guilty, in a basket, I'll come back and get them later. Do you think, as I do, there would have been a hell of a lot more yeses if this could have been done anonymously than there ended up being?
Oh, very much so. And there's very little question, you know, that President Trump was... Do I want to hold him directly responsible? But certainly he was a big factor in what happened on January 6th. His words, fight like hell, maybe not. But nevertheless, it was just the entire post-election behavior on his part. And then the rally, but his constant claim of fraud, which was not documented. And, we had about 50 court cases that demonstrated that. But yes, Mitch McConnell spoke after the impeachment after the trial. And McConnell, of course, voted not guilty. But then he went right in front of the Senate and said that Trump was morally responsible for it. And I would agree with you that if we were voting on who was morally responsible and got away from the real technical, jurisdictional, constitutional issue that was the reason most of the Republican senators voted not guilty. If we just stuck with the moral issue and that part of it, then I completely agree with you, Paul, that a majority of Republican senators would have voted guilty.
But they didn't, and we'll discuss why they didn't do that straight ahead. As always, we welcome Dr. Gary Rose to the program. Gary, hang on. Back with you momentarily. 3:36, traffic and weather together. Another storm coming in on Connecticut today on WICC. And Dr. Gary Rose, chair of the Department of Government at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield, is the guest. Gary, one of our go-to guys we like to have on every so often to get his opinion on the body politics. So, Gary, as you said, a very strongly worded statement from Mitch McConnell, responded to by the former president in his own unique way, a very strong statement. Is the brawl in the Republican Party, Gary, is it officially on, or can there be some peace? What do you think?
No, the brawl is officially on, and I'll be teaching political parties, I think, in the fall, and nice. I can't wait. It's because I think we have the emergence clearly of two very distinct factions within that party. One which is represented by Trump, and really the populist wing of that party, which is very strong, very passionate, very powerful too. But yet there are a good number still of very moderate Republicans who have essentially turned against President Trump and really are on the, I don't know if they're really on the side of Mitch McConnell, but I can't say that so much. But they look at Trump and they go, we got to move on. Now it's time to really rebrand this party. And I think as we go along, Paul, we're going to see without a doubt the more moderate side of the party growing and probably gaining some leverage, because now it's coming down to really 2022, the congressional election. And we're not going to, a number of Republicans are not going to want the president, former president, to be, campaigning with them or speaking on their behalf, because, I don't want to say that he's really, toxic, but at the same time, out there in the country, yes, there is, like I said, a strong populist dimension. But at the same time, in a lot of districts, And, you know, the Republicans are really close to winning the House. I'm not sure that the Trump brand is going to carry some of those swing districts.
Gary, do you think that he might be useful to the GOP? You know, you pick and choose your spots, you know, is, you know, does the GOP use the president or the former president? Does he hold a rally in Texas and not in Pennsylvania or not in Michigan? Could that be a possibility?
Great point. Yeah, I think that Trump's appeal is going to be regional. And there's no way on earth that he is going to have vast appeal any longer. Not that he really ever had vast appeal, but he's not going to be appealing, I should say, in those Rust Belt states, which he barely won in 2016 and then lost in 2020. So maybe he will show up in some districts, congressional districts, as you say, below the Dixie line there, down in the South, maybe in Alabama and Georgia, and as you say, in Texas and so forth, Mississippi. But I seriously doubt that your more moderate Republicans are running in the Midwest and the northern states are going to be inviting him to a campaign with them.
And you probably saw, though, Gary, that survey that came out of the folks at Quinnipiac a couple of days ago, that something like 70% or 80% of Republicans nationally that they talk to still want him to have at least some part in the national Republican push. That percentage kind of surprised me. Did it surprise you?
I was a little surprised at that figure. I think you're going to see that figure decline, though, as we get, as we move along in the post-Trump era. Right now, he's still a figure, but as I said, I believe that the moderate brand of Republicanism is going to be really rejuvenated in the days ahead, largely because Trump, people like Trump. They like the way he lambasts Democrats and so forth, but when you really get right down to brass tacks, do you really want this former president who's been impeached twice and who many do believe was responsible for that tragic event on January 6th out there campaigning with you? And I think that those figures, if you really got much more specific with that poll, the Quinnipiac poll, I think you would find some different attitudes. I do.
We're firmly in the honeymoon stage with the Biden White House. How long do you think that lasts? And do the Republicans say, Gary, all right, just do everything with reconciliation because we're not on board for any of this? What do you think in the next couple of months here?
Yeah, well, President Biden, he gave a wonderful inaugural address about bipartisanship and the country coming together. But it didn't take long for him to really break that pledge, and that's pretty evident with the extraordinary number of executive orders, which very few of which resemble any type of bipartisan, respect. And also now just pushing the COVID relief package, he said he can do that based on a party line vote. And so, if there was any goodwill among Republicans, that's probably gone already. And then even within the Democratic Party, you're starting to find some rumblings, too. I think the honeymoon with the parts of the party are probably coming to an end. He still has the media on his side. But even then, I think you're going to find some reporters start to realize that it's time to start covering this president in a much more objective and serious way. And I'm starting to see that actually during the press conferences with Jen Psaki, that some of the reporters now are asking tougher questions. So, the honeymoon is still on, but I think it's going to eventually evaporate, as they always do.
Yeah, Gary, to stay politics for a moment here, the governor came out a couple of days ago And he said, look, we're going to try this for road money and that for road money, but I am not going to propose any broad-based tax incentives. Did not sit well with the far left of the Democratic Party in the General Assembly, Gary, which is not a small faction. You know, a lot of the big city legislators, some others, are quite left-leaning there. What do you think of that? Is there a little banging of the heads coming up here between Governor Lamont, who, of course, is not a, you and I both know and everyone does, he's not a lifetime politician, and some of the people who are, in fact, lifetime politicians there?
Yeah. Well, I think that if we did a poll right now in his public approval ratings, they'd be pretty substantial.
Yeah.
Largely because he has said he's not going to raise taxes. And that, combined with his handling of the pandemic, has been pretty darn impressive, even though I know some people claim that he, you know, has been given too many emergency powers. But nevertheless, back to your point about not raising taxes, that resonates very, very well with a lot of voters in Connecticut. And you're right, there is a distinct liberal faction up there that wanted him to really soak the rich. But he said that's not the way to stimulate the Connecticut economy, and he's probably right on that, too. And so while he might lose the support of some of the far-left Democrats, as you note, I think that probably he is nevertheless gaining the support of some moderate Republicans, and certainly there are a lot of voters in Connecticut that are unaffiliated, and I think they, too, are probably on Lamont's side right now. So it's actually a very strategic, broad-based position that he's taking, losing perhaps, you know, like you said, some far left Democrats, but maintaining nevertheless a lot of support among the general electorate.
Gary, always good to get your thoughts. Dr. Gary Rose, chair of the Department of Government at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. Gary, be good. Take care of yourself. Have a good weekend. We'll talk down the road. Thank you.
Okay, Paul. All right. Take
Appreciate
care.
Appreciate it. Great stuff there as always. Dr. Gary Rose chairs the Department of Government at Sacred Heart University in Fairfield. Guess what? We have high school sports up and running in the state. I guess we didn't think we'd be there here a few months ago. Joining us right now, editor-producer of GameTimeCT.com. Check it out from Hearst, Connecticut Media. Sean Patrick Boley is with us. Hey, Sean, how are you?
Hey, Paul. Hey, hello from Hamden. How you doing up there in Wallingford?
Oh, it's the center of the universe. I keep telling people, Wallingford is the center of the known universe, and you probably know that coming up here to cover the team, so I guess I don't have to convince you about that. Anything you want is on Route 5. You know that. I know that. It's all good. Hey, Sean, last time we talked, we were like, oh, boy, what's going to happen? All these kids are not going to get to play. The seniors are going to be really bummed out. And all of a sudden, the basketballs are bouncing, and I'm watching some online high school hockey the other night. What happened?
Yeah, well, nature is healing, Paul. I guess that's the way to put it. I mean, it wasn't exactly the greatest rollout of the winter season. What happened was they had an idea of when to start it, and then all of a sudden the COVID cases started skyrocketing in Connecticut, just like they have been across the country. Mm-hmm. So they had to push it back from an early December start all the way to an early February start, when usually the season is about almost done with. Usually we end in March. And so they pushed it back, and now we're slowly starting to get back in a little bit. It's a shortened schedule for all teams. As you probably might know or may not know, wrestling was taken off the table, so there's no wrestling season, a little bit too much of a close contact, and so were a few other sports as well. But as you said, basketballs are dribbling, and hockey pucks are smashing into goalies across the state. Not exactly a smooth rollout. There's been a few quarantines here and there, and there promises to be a few more. And no fans are being allowed in the mostly in the gymnasiums. They're going to start to roll that in a little bit more as we go along. But like you said, yes, we do have winter sports starting, and it's hopeful down the road that it'll be a much more robust spring.
Did I see, though, Sean, that a couple of hockey locations, did I see that West Haven and the athletic director, I'm sorry, the board of ed, Mr. Cavallaro there in West Haven, did I see that he's catching a little flack for wanting to let a couple of people in per player? Did I read that right?
Yeah, he's the original plan from the SEC, which is the conference that West Haven is a part of, their original idea, and in a recommendation from some of the state associations, has said they really preferred no fans to be in these hockey rinks, because hockey rinks had been a source of maybe some outbreaks during, especially during the summer, and some issues there. So they wanted to take it. They want to be a little bit cautious on that side. But you know, the superintendent, Mr. Cavallaro, figured, listen, I don't think that. I think it we can allow some fans into our events. We won't allow everybody. We're going to allow the parents to come in. No outside fans. He just thought it was silly that, listen, if everyone's doing the right thing, they're wearing masks. Mm-hmm. He didn't see it much different than maybe having, you know, socially distant restaurants and things like that. And he's catching a little bit of flack from that, though, but he has a lot of supporters in West Haven who actually absolutely agree with him. They want to see their kids play. And I mean by that, I mean the parents. So, yeah, some issues here and there. We're working around it. The SEC kind of said, well, it wasn't a recommendation anyway. We're going to start allowing it. And I even think the governor is going to allow some fans to attend these events as well.
Yeah, he sounded like he was alluding to that a couple of days ago. The guest is Sean Patrick Boley from Hearst Connecticut Media's Game Time CT. It's the one stop for the best high school coverage in the state. Sean, I guess the one saving grace in this is that a lot of these schools now have video hookups. They have very active clubs, you know, kind of junior broadcasters, depending upon where they are. And a lot of these games can actually be viewed online, so mom and dad or grandma and grandpa don't have to risk, you know, risk going to the rink or the gym. A lot of these schools are doing a good job at kind of doing this stuff online.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. If you have stock and video equipment, you know, your portfolio is looking pretty good. Yeah, and it's a great opportunity for a lot of it. You know, like you said, young broadcasters, kids who want to get into the business. You know, not all of them have broadcasters, but they just have live feeds from the game, and they can at least watch. They know, you know, their son or their daughter's numbers, and they can at least watch them play. The hockey community has Live Barn, which is the live feed from all of the rinks in Connecticut, which aren't there aren't that many. But Live Barn is a feed you can watch all the hockey games you want. It's almost like, you know, having some sort of a massive cable package for you on that front. And a lot of schools have also gotten into the NFHS network. There are some paid subscriptions, some not, but it's definitely a boon for that type of business. No question. If you can't get there in person, you can probably pay a quick fee for, you know, like $10-$15 for a few months, or maybe even a year. I think it's like $25. For the NFHS network, and it's, you know, more than, it's just a little bit more than a price of a ticket these days, $10 about, and you can see your kids play. I mean, it's not what everyone wants, but sure, but it's not like if this happened like what 20 years ago, not even maybe 15, they didn't even have that type of option, and we were really been in trouble. So at least you have that to kind of placate some of the people who maybe think, you know, maybe we shouldn't be having fans in there.
And I see a note here on your Twitter feed, Sean, some good news. You and I had talked months ago, and so did everyone else, and said, hey, what about these kids, these guys and gals, these senior year players who want to play at the next level? How is this what we thought was going to be a complete off year of not being able to play their sport going to hurt their college opportunities? And I see here that the NCAA is now going to extend the recruiting period for all D1 sports through May 31st. So that's good.
Yeah. I mean, recruiting has been a real sore spot for, you know, for everybody involved, and college has just been kind of a mess as well. They don't have a lot of, a lot of sports being postponed, like the football is being postponed. High schools, you know, obviously football here got postponed, or actually we're not playing football. They completely canceled that season, that idea they're going to play this spring because the winter season got pushed up. Recruiting has obviously been a real sore spot for a lot of coaches who really feel like they haven't been able to give them the opportunity to play. So, it's going to be really interesting with the recruiting news. And but, you know, when I looked at some of the lists we published for kids who have found spots, this seems to be a pretty robust. Kids have been finding places, but yeah. It's like usually that kid that, you know, who would have benefited from the past season not getting to play last season. So that really kind of hurt, and really it was a sore spot for a lot of coaches. And it's just kind of a thing that kind of goes down the line. I mean, yeah, high school kids couldn't get recruited. You know, you have a lot of college players who really maybe didn't play as much as they should have, or, you know, that's going to be a challenge going forward, getting kids to the places. But the good news is you see that kids are finding spots for sure.
Finally, Sean, what do you hear, if anything? I know it's early, but I'm sure the coaches and the conferences and the state officials are thinking about it. Down the line into, say, August, when the preparations hopefully would begin to restart high school football in the state. I know they're probably projecting out what the trajectory of COVID-19 would be, but anything you're hearing at all yet about a possible coming season?
Yeah, as far as football is concerned, first we got to get to spring. I think they really want to. I haven't heard anything off. You know, they are not looking that far ahead. I've asked about it. I'm optimistic about it, and I've kind of conveyed that. Look, there's been a lot of study. Even I was on Channel 3 last week, and yeah. They had the director of the National Federation of High Schools, which is like Carissa Niehoff, who was from Connecticut. She was the head of the CIAC, and she seemed to say that there has been changes in the knowledge of what, how to transmit COVID and what's that all about, what sports transmit it. And they have found, that sports really hasn't been the big, you know, transmission vector that everybody really thought it would be, or a lot of people thought it would be. Now that's going to justify some of the anger that people had about canceling some of the football seasons. But again, you're looking back a year ago where there's a lot we didn't know of how this was going to play out. And a lot of this stuff was done precautionary. Yeah. So that, in my mind, there have been studies done. You saw the NCAA play their football season. You saw the NFL play their football season. They were able to do it relatively safely. I mean, again, they found that the transmission of the disease usually came from the activities that surrounded it. Now, if you're able to tamper that down, as you can see, high school is going on with their sports now, it would be it would be good news for football. Now, I don't think COVID is going to be gone by August, but the numbers are dropping like a stone. You have vaccines coming out, and it looks like it's going to be on. I would be shocked if there's going to be anything, you know, like that. I think I would even think it would be a full season too. I think we would have pretty much a full season. It really just depends on what happens this winter, where the cases go, how many people start getting the vaccine. I mean, I'm here in summertime that we could all have one by then. And it really, we'll see how spring goes. If we can get a full season of spring in, I don't see how we don't have anything close to, I don't see how we have something that doesn't resemble a normal football season next fall.
Got to reopen the snack shacks, man. I'm telling you, there's nothing like those Friday night high school hot dogs, man.
We all miss it. Yeah, it's been a struggle. We all miss it. A lot of states played it. A lot of schools struggling with it, not getting that revenue. So it's, you know, we really, I think it's time to get back on the gridiron for sure.
Sean Patrick Boley, editor-producer, Hearst Connecticut Media's Game Time CT, GameTimeCT.com. Sean, good to speak with you. We'll talk down the road. Be good.
All right, thanks, Bob.
Thanks, appreciate it. Check him out, folks. Sean Patrick Boley, Bowley, leads a good high school site there, GameTimeCT.com. So there you go.